miss him very much. So far, so the price of the product in the is the effect of market value. The less competition, the more you can charge for it. The first microwave had cost $50,000 and now costs $50 from China. So if Chinese could sell for as much as Japanese, the none of ENA would not sell. And we would be buying Japanese none of ENA for much more than. And American business would not go to China. So in other words, is we're buying from China junk. But sometimes the junk serves the purpose. They agree or not? And to exchange.
AC2GS. Probably this is not a direct response, but an indirect one. I was listening to an interesting YouTube discussing why furniture is garbage these days, which is a kind of a parallel to, you know, what you're saying about the garbage the Chinese stuff is. And they pointed out an interesting thing. It's not in a vacuum that Chinese furniture is crap. It's also the retailers that are buying and writing contracts to Chinese manufacturers where they're putting in the cheapest amount of money humanly possible, where it's kind of difficult for anyone to build anything but crap. If you wanna sell a dining room table and the retailer says to the wholesaler, I'm only gonna give you $75, then you're going to get a dining room table that's worth $75, which is, you know, something made out of ticky tack. So it's not only the Chinese just that they produce cheap stuff. It's that manufacturers are trying to squeeze the most profits out of things and keep the prices down to keep the sales up at the cost of quality themselves. So it's the retailer that's just as guilty as anyone else, and even us, the customer, because we will tolerate this for the sake of it being a little bit cheaper than it used to be. In the good old days, you know, before 2000, you bought an appliance, you bought a washer, a dryer, a refrigerator, an air conditioner, and pretty much it was going to last you at least 15, 20, 30 years. Nowadays, you're lucky if you get it to work for 5 years. It's not built to work for more than 5 years. And it's not exactly, you know, planned obsolescence. It's just everyone is kind of going on the cheap. So you go on the cheap, and you get the cheap. But again, it's as much our problem as it is the retailer's problem as it is the manufacturer's problem.
Good point. Good point. I had a GM washing machine and a dryer that served me for 23 years till I bought the new one. And I bought the new one not because the old one was damaged or didn't work, but because it was too noisy. It was too noisy. So it was just for me to decide whether I buy something that is going to last 3 years, 5 years, maybe. But at least it's three times quieter. So, yeah, good point. Thank you very much for that, Dr. Roy. Okay. The next one. Incredible garbage, but it works. Yes, it is incredible garbage that works. So we have cheap radio, not bad, or not so bad, if you might think, when looking at it, it's 2.8 inch by 1.2 inch by 0.47 inch. It comes with different enclosure. Some of them are ugly 3D printed. Some of them are in metal enclosure. And this is ESP32-S3. S147232 pocket multiband radio receiver. But because it's so small, it has battery built in, it is like being able to listen to what's going on wherever you want to go. So it does have a display. The device is powered by a microcontroller integrated with 1.9-inch display and make versatility platform for radio enthusiasts, or that's what they say in here. The battery is good for 10 hours or more, and it goes from 9.9 kilohertz to 108 megahertz. So if you want to listen to 2 meters of 70 centimeters, you can, but for 8.7, 6 meters and 4 meters for those who live in the areas where 4 meters is available, allowed, it is good. Let me drop it.
Can I have a comment? This is KB2FYH in the Bronx.
Sure.
All right. Everything that's cheap and looks good and shiny is, to me, nothing but acceptable mediocrity. And that's what it's come down to, acceptable mediocrity. What is junk, it may be shiny, but it's junk. Over.
Okay, what's your first name, by the way?
My name is Jim, KB2FYH.
Okay, well, yeah, you're right, but that's what people want. They want the new shiny thing. If the old stuff, you know, annoys them in any way, shape, or form, we live in a disposable economy where, you know, capitalism runs on the wheels of, you know, cycle through things as fast as humanly possible. You know, every year you got to buy a new cell phone. Every year you got to buy this. Every year you got to buy that. If the old one works, trade it in or put it in the back of your drawer someplace in case you ever need a paperweight. You know, again, it's not some strange organization's fault. It's our fault as human beings to be as kind of stupid in many ways as that. But we are. We will, you know, they'll announce some meaningless feature, and you'll say, oh, well, I already had this thing for 2 years. What am I still doing with it? Let me throw it away and buy a shiny new one that has this new feature that I'll never use. So, I mean, again, I tend to take it as a collective fault of humanity. I don't think there's some kind of shady big brother doing this to us.
Oh, so what if someone was to come into my radio shack, they could believe what they see. I still have a rotary phone that I've had on here for years. My Collins F-line is here from 1959. That's when it was made. And my Swan tube units. I love tube units. They say this stuff, you know, this stuff is junk. No. It has lasted this long, and I am on the air. Amen. A comment?
Yes, please, comment.
Yeah, I just want to say a hearty amen to the last gentleman there. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. The older equipment was designed to be repairable. You could modify it. You could improve it. But most of all, you could repair it. And a good example is I have, the transceiver I'm using right now, a Kenwood transceiver, one of the audio gain pots, potentiometers, went out about 2 or 3 years ago. And, of course, it was some little potentiometer that was only made by a single source. So I had to improvise an output board to hold it. At the same time, I had problems with the potentiometer in my old a Japan radio company a transmitter, and it was a plain old off-the-shelf junk box potentiometer. I yanked out the old one, slapped the new one in, and boom, it's up and running. So yes, the newer materials are not designed to be repairable, whereas the older equipment, as you say, the older Collins S-line, you could repair things. The old tube linear amplifiers, you could repair things. Go ahead.
AC2GS. Well, I mean, electronics in general was built differently in the old days that lend itself to being repaired. And there were a lot lot of people out there who made a living repairing things. They repaired radios, they repaired TVs, they repaired tools, they repaired all kinds of things. But over the last 30, 40 years, especially with the onslaught of disposable economy, the actual manufacturing optimized the saving some money manufacturing these things with surface mounts at the price of making it significantly more difficult for technicians to repair things. And again, because the overwhelming force was consumers trying to save a couple of bucks and manufacturers trying to save a couple of bucks, that's why everything is surface mount. And Jim, I appreciate what you're saying. I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were listening, that one of the things I love about my fellow hams is they, most for the most part, don't care about Super Bowl, but also they love old stuff. They don't really go for the shiny stuff. Some do. There's always a show-off or something, or I tend to prefer kind of bleeding edge because I'm curious about new technology. But, I mean, a lot of amateur radio operators have a lot of respect for the old equipment. I mean, Dick, K2RIW, may he rest in peace, you know, got rid of his cathode ray television sets only a few years before he passed away. You know, everyone else has kind of switched over to flat panels. He stuck with the cathode ray tubes. That's not unusual. You know, he didn't have a cell phone. That's not unusual. I mean, you sort of think that he was so into radios that cell phone is just another radio. But, you know, there's something about hams that differentiate us from the general population. We are not the consumers that most of the manufacturers are taking marketing advice from. It's a whole other group of people. It's youngsters that can't have a cell phone for more than a year because, you know, that's last year's cell phone. So I understand you, Jim. I feel for you, Jim. But, you know, we are not the majority. We are a distant minority.
Well, screw the majority. And I'm happy for the what's left of us, for the minority. I think it's a wonderful thing. And if someone came into my shack and said, this guy is troglodytic, no, I'm very happy and I'm on the air. And again, I say, oh, me. Good night.
Okay. Good night, Jim. Again, you know, when they're sitting around in that big office in Apple, and trying to figure out what to build and market for next year. They ain't thinking about you. They ain't thinking about me. I mean, if you've ever seen advertising demographics, you know, if you're past the age of about 55, most manufacturers couldn't care less about you. You've already kind of locked in on what you're going to buy, when you're going to buy it, and you can't be quite as manipulated as younger people. So you're not thinking about us, I assure you.
Comment.
Yes, Brian?
Oh, I think you would recognize my voice. Yes, KF2ZZ online, late.
Yes, I recognize your name. I recognize your voice, actually. You didn't say your name. You didn't say your call sign. You got to get into a better habit with that.
I shall.
Okay, did you want to make a comment, or you just wanted to point out that you've arrived?
I just want to point out to you that I'm here.
Oh, okay. So, Jim, don't be a stranger. Like I said, you're a brother here. We all, to one degree or another, feel the same way that you do, and I realize it's frustrating. And I realize that you don't care how the other people feel. But, again, business cares about where the money is. You're not where the money is. I'm not where the money is. Young people who throw their cell phones away every year is where the money is until the money runs out.
And that was a good point with the rotary phone. I love it. It's a nostalgia. I love it. That was a good point, but unfortunately nobody used copper wire any longer.
everything is now internet, and the telephone is right now using fiber optic and internet IP address. Anyhow, let me go to the next one. Fiber optic drone, since we're talking about the fiber optic, used in the war between Russia and Ukraine. So, interesting thing is that unlike traditional drones, they rely on vulnerable radio signals. So Russian, they have the old-fashioned, but in the new style, new electronics device that it could actually make the radio signal that is communicating with the drone unreadable. They used it many years ago in 70s, 60s, and 50s for radio for Europe and Voice of America, not allowing countries who were under Russian occupation to listen to the truth. But my father did, and he showed me how to do it. And in 9 years old, I built my first radio. I was 9 years old with the help of my father. Let me try. Anyhow, so those drones right now, they use fiber optic guided UAVs and use cables to transmit data, providing more secure and stable connection and making them less susceptible to electronic warfare attacks. So imagine that you have a drone that has a spool with 30 miles of fiber, and the information is sent to the fiber. But the problem with that is that they cannot replace the batteries. So the time of the drone in the air is exactly the same, but because it's not disturbed unless the fiber is tangled to the tree or whatever, then of course the drone cannot go further. That's just how the technology of the drones evolve. And what? We have 10 years of drones. The Chinese manufacturers who are good in it right now, FGI, I forgot the company name. You can buy the Mavic drone in Manhattan B&H if you want. But now there are so much of licensing requirements. Many of them do not buy it. I don't have a drone. Do you, Dr. Roy?
Comment?
No. I'm always searching for an excuse to buy one, but I talk myself out of it regularly. DJI, very, very good Chinese company. They have excellent quality control. Matter of fact, a few of the people who used to work for DJI, they quit and they opened up their own completely different business, and a lot of people know them as Bamboo Labs. They make some of the best 3D printers around these days. So DJI and then people who used to work for DJI. You can get around a lot of the rules because the DJI specifically manufactures, I think it's half a kilo. There's a minimum weight below which you don't have to register your drone with anyone. So, and I think they're even making it a little bit loosey-gooseier. They used to have geofencing where they would simply not go into areas that didn't allow drones, and I think the company kind of said that they're going to phase that out. Because if you remember, they got into a little bit of trouble in Ukraine because the drones that were getting bought by DJI got to a certain point in Ukraine towards Russia, and they got geofenced. So the company itself said they're doing away with those. So they're interesting toys, and eventually I will give in to the urge and buy one, but not yet.
Comment?
Yes, Brian?
I'd just like to ask, I'm familiar with the drones. A friend of mine said he bought a drone, and it was a DJI, I think it was called a Maverick, maybe, or something like that. And he was all thrilled with it until it crashed. And then after that, it was just like he had to go ahead and spend a lot of money to repair it. But I'd just like to go ahead and direct one question to Wesley. Wesley, you said about the fiber optic spool on the drones that are being deployed from Ukraine, that they're, what, 30 miles, did you say?
That is correct, 30 miles. 30 miles spool that is mounted on the drone. So if, let's say, the fiber got a tangle on some trees, the spool is still attached to the drone, so the drone can still fly as long as the battery is intact. But they rather use that for the drones. They do not have an explosive. Let's say some other drones, FTV, they could have some explosive attached and they could go anywhere. But they have some very heavy drones that could handle even 20 or, 40 pounds of explosives called Baba Yaga. I don't know how to translate it into English. The witch, Baba Yaga, the witch. Okay, and those, if they are driven by fiber optic, they are immune to any kind of radio interference. Back to you.
Okay. The question I wanted to ask you, if it's 30 miles of a single fiber, how much would a spool of 30 miles weigh?
The half of a kilogram, a quarter of the kilogram, depends what is the thickness of it. So talking about 1 kilogram is 2 pounds. So half of a kilogram is 1 pound. Back to you.
Wesley?
Go ahead.
Yeah, the stuff that you sent me, they kept on talking about the spool. The theoretical spool weight they always seem to be giving in that video was 1.5 kilograms.
Yeah, it depends on the thickness. If they are in the forest areas, they use the fiber that is thicker, and it weighs more. So it's 1.5 kilogram of the fiber optic. If they use in the rural areas, so usually in Ukraine, rural areas are just a field with a road divided by a road, and the road has trees around the road. So it's like a small, very thin sort of forest. We could call it forest, like five trees wide, and it's long for, let's say, 3 miles or 2 miles or whatsoever. So then they use a very thin one. Back to you.
Okay, I'm just pointing out that the source material you sent kept on, the only weight that I recall them throwing around was 1.5 kilos. There's no set amount of weight. It depends upon the range that you want, and as you mentioned, how sturdy you want the cable to be. Theoretically, you would want it to be very stable, but you would want it to be very long, but that's going to add weight to the whole thing. So this was, I think, initially something that the Russians were doing to the Ukrainians. Then the Ukrainians just turned it around and used it on them.
That is correct. Russia was the first one who used that, but because Russia has deficit of everything. Everything. Even the soldiers they took from North Korea. Over 12,000 of them. Because they have a deficit of something. I mean, imagine that the salary they are being paid for being on the war, the Russians, is 200,000 of rubles, which comes to $2,000. So you can become a disabled person with feet, hands, and whatsoever, just for $2,000 a month. I mean, it's ridiculous what is going over there. So they don't have material, they don't have the technology. So the technology was coming from China, but because of our government, it is much more difficult for them to get it, but it's not difficult for Ukrainians to have it back to you.
Yeah, I mean, the Ukrainians have the support of the Western world, and the Russians have the support of North Korea and China. You know, let's see how far he can take that. And it's a kind of half-assed one with the Chinese. You know, Xi Jinping is looking after Xi Jinping. He's not looking out for Russia. So, you know, there are wheels within wheels going on, in these things. So, you know, it's kind of terrible. The Russian people have learned for centuries to suffer, and they seem to do it without too much complaining. I mean, every 100 years or so, they might kind of whine or complain a little bit. But otherwise, what do you want me to do? You want me to go in there with a bunch of people with guns, and you're going to give me a stick? Okay, fine, wonderful. So, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't wish ill on anyone. But, you know, after a while of taking abuse, there's only so much abuse you should allow yourself to take. You know, I mean, this is multi-generational. This goes back to Ivan the Damn Terrible.
Beautiful words, Mr. Roy. I know what you're saying. I'm in the United States of America as an American citizen. And I'm proud of being American. Because America used to be a country of democracy and freedom and rights, not a country of crypto men and billionaires ruling the country. I don't know what's going to be, but this is not something that I would like to talk about. The next one, thesis. So I asked you the question. I know you had the time to read that. I said, there is so much excitement around the ham radio community, I'm confused. I didn't play with it at all. So there is a Hermes, a little tube, which is SDR receiver, transceiver, with its own software. But also, hold on, where's my mouse? But also, there is a TESIS software, version 2, by G8NJJ on behalf, and it's a beautiful software. It's a beautiful software. I wonder if one works with the other, because it looks like, and did you use it? Did you have a chance to read the article? Back to you.
Yeah, I scanned the article. It's a nice interface. It's not compatible with Flex Radio 6000 or the new 8000 series. When they had the previous Flex Radios, they had the SDR software open. They made it open source, and so a lot of people used the open source and modified it. And it annoyed the owner of Flex Radio that he had put in work doing this open source and everyone else was making profits off of it. So when the 6000 was announced 12 years ago, they made a point of making it proprietary. So there are API hooks, but you have to go through them, and you got to get a license to go through them. So no, none of this open source or semi-closed source SDR software that runs a lot of non-proprietary protocols, SDRs, we'll work on the flex.
Okay, so thank you for explaining that. So we're talking about Hermes Light 2 SDR transceiver. We're talking about the sending low cost direct down up conversion software to find an amateur radio HF transceiver. And it is based on the broadband modern chip and the crisp price, small size, and a good coverage. I'm not going to go to it. Everybody can find by itself and read it, but just a few words. True dual receiver operation, complete digital signal processing chain, comprehensive special spectrum and waterfall display, the selectable QRM reduction, wideband noise blanking and noise reduction, operating CW SSB AM and FM modes, interface to digital mode decoders for digital modes, extensive voice processing and compression for transmitter operation and transmitter linearization using perch signal, antenna diversity for the weak signal enhancement, and QRM rejection. So that would be all. And then I have a few other subjects that I would like to go quickly. Any comment into XGN?
I don't have any comment.
Okay, LPR. LPR, your car is being watched by anybody. Yes, anybody. People listening to me could watch my car. What is LPR? License plate recognition software and hardware and technology. It is being used by cops, but it's being used by anybody who wants to buy it. So it's a public video data feed of highway license plate recorders. Again, the title of the video is in YouTube, public video and data feed of highway license plate readers. Now, it is shown in it how anybody can log into the public database and can see the license plates of anybody. So LPR with no authentication required, screening your car whenever, wherever you wish to have it, accessible to anyone in the world right from your computer. I will probably add more links later, but... Actually, I can do it. I can install it. I'm licensed by the state of New York to do it. So I can install LPR systems and maintain LPR systems and connect them. So actually, I have a camera that should be connected to my NVR, but it takes 20 minutes or so to do it, but I didn't do it yet. Anyhow. I could have a collection of all of the cars passing by, and you can think about having the same, because some of you people might be interesting. Okay, I enter XGN. I see some car, and I click one button in my NVR, and I want to know how many times in the past half of a year this guy was passing by or standing by on the left or right hand side. So it's good for your security. Anyhow, so on other words, every car passing by street can be registered, including time, date, IR plate, picture, and in addition to its color picture. But the thing is that so far, this video, again, I repeat the video name. You can find it in YouTube, public video and data feed of highway license plate recorders. The guy shows step by step how to log into this public site that has all of the information, all of the links, and anybody can log into it. Incredible. Enter XGN.
Well, like I often say, privacy is an illusion. You know, eventually they're going to have augmented reality glasses that'll feed into a face recognition database. And as you walk down the street, you'll get the name, the address, the birthday, the social security number of everyone passing you by.
Right. So, what worries me is that anybody can walk anywhere, doesn't have to be a car, and somebody else, because he wants to, not because he has, he is still the artist, just because he wants to. He can look to the public the camera. It's not the public camera. It's the camera made for a special purpose by the government. Is it local government? Is it federal government? It doesn't matter. And somebody else could be Russian. It's not that I have something about Russian. No, I have a friend, Russian friend. But could be some bad Russian. Somewhere in Russia. Because he wants to. Incredible. Okay, so the next one, inventiveness of the thief stealing your money at ATM or when you're paying for your groceries. So it's a general talk about Faraday cage. So what happened is there was another video that I sent, that was 12 years ago, that I sent to Dr. Roy. This is N2XGN, hold on. Okay, so there was some guy who went to the grocery store or the market, regular market, where they have those machines where you swipe your credit card or punch your code, whatsoever, so that could be Home Depot. And they have, those machines, they have a keypad. So he took the keypad from the other machine that was, let's say, for broken whatsoever. They had no access to that keypad. He lighted over the existing one and was able to steal the money. Or make it think, make the machine think that the item is paid for. So imagine that you are standing in line at your favorite coffee shop, casually scrolling through your phone, without you even realizing a digital thief with a hidden scanner strolls past, quietly lifting your credit card details straight from your wallet. But that line that I just read to you is not the line of somebody who is worried. It's a line of the guy who wants to make money by offering you some junk, let's say from China, doesn't have to be from China, could be homemade junk, wallets, that say, you know what, we put something on the tab, we put something on the bottle, and the radio waves would not be able to access it. Let me drop. Okay, and they say more. Those guys who want to sell those wallets, they say, $28 billion of dollars, emptying bank accounts, stealing identities, and leaving their victims in ruins, and 15 million people fall victim to digital theft whatsoever. So some mics, guys, make money by offering you sort of inventiveness, protecting your credit card. So let's say if you have a top protective layer, and it's a metal, and then they say it's jamming the signal of your card, the RFID, that has an antenna. Then at the bottom you have aluminum foil layer, and then you have a bottom another protective layer. They say it protects you. Nothing more wrong. And I sent to Dr. Roy. I sent to Dr. Roy a picture of my professional Faraday cage. It's made from metal, it's made from good quality copper, and it says on it 0 to 300 kilohertz. It has a foam, everything that is made for the lab. I put my phone there and my phone still rings. It doesn't protect it. So
guys trying to buy the world thinking that it's going to protect your car. It's a BS. Dr. Roy.
Well, again, there's a whole bunch of people out to con the rest of us, to kind of steal the money without any violence. At least they're not violent. Most of them aren't violent. So you come up with any technology, and you'll have a whole bunch of grifters making all kinds of promises. Some of them have crystals and necklaces that will let you live forever. Sometimes it's a piece of tinfoil that you stick on the side of your cell phone, and it magically stops all the RF from coming and going, except that the cell phone still works. So, you know, you got to explain that to some people. Some people know enough that if you're going to block RF, then your cell phone shouldn't be working anymore. But, again, a lot of people who are grifting us. Millions, unfortunately. It seems like there's never been as many grifters as there are today out there. So caveat emptor, let the buyers beware. But again, this is a part of human nature. There are great things about human nature. There are awful things. There's a whole bunch of people that if someone falls for their nonsense, it's those guys' fault. It's not the crook's fault. That, you know, marks deserve what they get is the philosophy. So that's life, unfortunately.
Okay, so thank you very much, Dr. Roy. So, in other words, is don't believe in all of those offered to you ways of protecting your card. In my phone, in my Faraday cage that has no holes, rings, because my Faraday cage was made with kilohertz bandwidth, not megahertz, gigahertz bandwidth. That means this Faraday cage is not for that. It's not made for that, even though there is a full metal box. I'm not sure how can we go quick around. Is fire conductive enough to get shocked? Because I have a lot of material. I want to have it not really the way that it will turn us off the listeners, the audience, but just to catch some points in it. Let's say we know that the breakdown voltage for the air, 30,000 volts, for the centimeter, I don't know how it's per inch, but then if the air is hot, then the conductivity of that air is higher. So sometimes you could use the your blower for the hair for the woman stuff, whatever, or the high heat hot air hot gun, and it can make the spark jump between the two wires of their of the high voltage circuit. Dr. Roy, maybe you can explain it quick and take to the point. Back to you.
AC2GS. I don't really know what the point is, so I'm probably not going to be able to do it well, but it's not that hot air is more conductive. It's that hot air has a lower breakdown voltage because the electrons are already have more kinetic energy in them when they're hotter than when they're colder, and so the idea of breakdown voltage is the amount of energy that you need to release to the system where ionization starts to take place, and that's what breakdown voltage is. So hotter air has a lower breakdown voltage than colder air. Not that it's not conductivity.
2CC with a comment.
Yes, Brian?
Sorry to interrupt. I just, would you have a moment if I could ask one ham radio question? One before we go off.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be quick. So, in other words, you mentioned that you have a ladder line for your radio, right? Similar way, the Jacob ladder line is built. So, let's say you have two wires with a half voltage on it, and then you have a 30,000 volt per centimeter, and centimeter is half of an inch, roughly. Not even half of an inch, it's a little bit less than half of an inch. Okay. And then if you blow the hot air gun into that gap, you're creating the spark, because it's the electric breakdown of the hot air is lower than 30,000 volts, much lower. So you can easily do it, and then we may think, if there is a fire, should we be afraid that something is going to hit us, or maybe the fireman is going to be affected? Well, the thing is that if you have a problem, we will have a problem with the high-voltage electric lines or the high-voltage transformer on the pole, and the wires possibly being there, and it's not only step voltage, or that we can take to consideration, or touch voltage. The step voltage is the voltage between your legs. So sometimes electricians say, if you are in a place where there is a transformer station whatsoever, and there is a problem, hop on one leg. This way you don't create a step voltage or touch voltage. Touch voltage is vertical, that means between your leg and your hand. So if let's say you think that you're going to be electrocuted somewhere, better off make sure that you are isolated from the ground, and the voltage goes on your arm, not on your heart. Dr. Roy knows better. Back to you, Dr. Roy.
You don't want a circuit that's going to go through your heart. That's how people tend to get killed. Your heart has an internal pacemaker beating it, keeping its rhythm. And if current runs across your heart, you're going to screw up your pacemaker, which causes your heart to either stop or go into fibrillation, and then without your heart pumping blood into anything, you fall down and go bye-bye. You set up kind of a premise of can you get electrocuted by fire? Well, fire entails some degree of plasma creation. The yellow and the blue light from a flame is plasma. Plasma is charged gases, so they conduct electricity. But the problem is that most likely the heat of the fire itself is going to kill you a lot faster than the plasma that coexists with it and electrical charges that exist elsewhere. So, you know, once you're dead, the plasma might make you deader, I guess, if that was a thing.
Yes and no. That means yes, because you're right, absolutely. No, because if you swap your hand in the flame, you might likely feel some heat, or maybe something on your hand is gonna affect you, but you're not gonna get burned if you do it quick. Or let's say if you're jumping where there is a fire, the amount of time that the fire that you're crossing is affecting your body is small. But if there is a voltage there, that plasma that is conducting the voltage, and we have a heat and a voltage because of lower the electric constant, then you're going to get electrocuted very fast. Back to you.
Well, I kind of disagree with the details. Theoretically, yes, but in practical terms, the ionized gas is comes and goes. It's not a stable thing, and you know it's seldom anywhere near a source of electricity as well. So you would need a sustainable plasma generation that touched both a electrical source and you. And again, that's a kind of complicated, unlikely set of criteria. It's much more likely that just the hot air generated from the combustion products of the fire would just sear your flesh. You know, I mean, if you just had a very short period of time exposed to the heat, so it's a thermal conduction problem, that the thermal energy doesn't have an opportunity to be transferred to you, then most likely you would have far less chance of plasma introducing a electrical circuit going through your body. But, you know, I mean, I guess it would be an interesting experiment, but I tend to think that it would be highly unlikely.
Everything is highly unlikely. The brick that is falling in your head is highly unlikely, but it happens to some of the guys. Somebody win $1 billion in the lottery. Highly unlikely, but they do. Okay, so Jacob's ladder line is exactly done this way. So that means something is highly unlikely to be stable. Right, I agree with you. But if you have a high voltage potential that is only waiting for a little bit more hot air to blow between those two wires, high voltage wires, then you have a steady plasma flow. Back to you.
Well, but that's not a usual thing in a fire. There's practically nothing I can think of. Jacob's ladder are interesting little school and high school lab experiments where you put a high voltage potential between two wires and you see the sparks climb up them. I thought we were discussing primarily the plasma created by fires themselves, which have no particular relationship with high voltage potential. So I'm confused of where Jacob's ladder works its way into anything. I mean, the only time I'm willing to bet most people out there ever saw a Jacob's ladder, other than on a video in real life, is in a high school on a desk in a science lab in high school. So I mean, you're not presented with a Jacob's ladder during fires for the most part, at least that I'm aware of.
About 3 years ago, I was driving into XG, and I was driving on the street with my car, and then I heard something, boom, and then something fell on my roof, and I say, what is going on? And then I stopped the car, and I saw that the transformer blow out. And the two high voltage wires, not a 100 volts, but thousands of volts, high voltage wires, were just affected by the spark that was jumping because the transformer was on fire and still working. So you had a Jacob ladder. Unlikely happened, but it happened. So what I'm saying is, if you're in a situation when there are two wires touching the ground and you have a step voltage whatsoever and there is a hot, something hot, it is much faster that you're going to get electrocuted than it is just if there is no fire at all. But I agree, absolutely agree with you. You're right that this is something that may happen likely in your school, high school table. Back to you.
Yeah, I think the problem is that you're kind of thinking it solely in terms of an electrical fire, which is a suborder of fires. Most fires are not electrical fires. Can you get electrocuted by an electrical fire? Yes, because it's an electrical fire. It's the electricity that's producing the fire in the first place. So, you know, yeah, sure, you can get electrocuted in an electrical fire. But, you know, just a generic accelerant chemical fire? No. Because, again, it requires so many things to happen simultaneously that are unrelated. Chemical fires don't have a lot of ionization. They don't have a high voltage potential. So if you want to say that is there a risk of having being electrocuted in the midst of an electrical fire, yes. I think that would simplify things.
Thank you for that, Dr. Roy. And then I ask for help, Dr. Roy, because I had no idea what's going on. Let's say we have, we want to have electricity for free, if it's possible, but unlikely going to happen like that. So we have a solar panels whatsoever, you have to pay for it, and eventually we hope that we're going to get more than we paid for the solar panels. And during the night time, you have no production of electricity, but you would like to somehow store the electricity that is produced during the daytime. So the problem is with the storage. You could have batteries, you could have the something that is a flywheel. The flywheel is known since 1900. It's nothing new. And now we have some company that is called Qnetic, Q-N-E-T-I-C, Qnetic. And they say that they have something incredible, absolutely amazing, and if you just pay for it, you're going to be amazed. So what they do is they put the flywheel in the vacuum and in the magnetic bearing. Dr. Roy, because you had a good comment on it, please, enter it here.
I see two GFs. Yeah, well, I mean, the point is that, yes, flywheels are 19th century technologies. They're used to this day. A lot of electric vehicles use flywheels to recapture kinetic energy when you hit the brakes. Instead of just causing heat and friction and such, it actually turns the flywheel and stores the kinetic energy until you're ready to use it again. So flywheels are old, magnetic bearings are old, vacuums are old. All this stuff was known about 80 years ago. So what did this guy come up with? Well, I don't have a clue. And anyone reading any of the articles that you sent me wouldn't have a clue because he doesn't really explain anything. So it's a guess. There's a lot of people out there doing R&D on all kinds of things on startups. There's going to be billions of dollars lost. You know, people take a chance. They invest some money. And if they hit, 7 or 11, they win. Otherwise, snake eyes, they lose. And there's no particular reason to assume that this R&D startup is going to win anything. So, you know, if you feel lucky and you don't need the money, then you might consider it. I wouldn't. You know, there are 10,000 R&D startups right now. You know, if you spent your money on all of them, you wouldn't have any money to spend on any more. So, startups have an incredible failure rate. So I don't expect anything special for these guys. There are a bunch of people who came from a Chinese windmill manufacturing company. So you would think that they would kind of sell it to those guys because they have a lot of money to invest. But for some odd reason, they didn't.
Okay. What caught my attention was that they were able to talk few good guys with a good education, a good future to come to their company. Dr. Nanhan Mellenbrink, Harvard University, Dr. Matthias Mier, and plenty of others. So actually, they say that they are different. Because they have low-cost rotor, which is a flywheel, on magnetic bearings in the vacuum. allowing it to store more energy for extended periods of with minimal losses. Of course, if you have magnetic bearings,